This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is part of our episode, Changing Landscapes. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's a part of Philadelphia, just a few miles north of the Liberty Bell, that's a well-known mecca for drugs. It's become infamous as one of the largest outdoor heroin markets on the East Coast. Drug dealing happens on many corners in this bustling neighborhood, but also snaking right through it is a stretch of railroad tracks and an embankment where countless people have gone over the years to shoot up. Some have even lived there. Recently, though, that area by the tracks has hit a new chapter. The city has reached a deal with the railroad company to close it down, and the cleanup process began just a few weeks ago. But how did this situation even get to this point? Alana Gordon brings us the history of this place and the bigger story about addiction, urban decline, and development.
Ramon Cruz has a much different association with these tracks from when he was a boy. The area rose to fame 40 years ago. Yes, Rocky Balboa, played by Sylvester Stallone, ran parts of those tracks in the movie.
Oh, as a young kid, yeah, that was like, whoo, that was one of the biggest things around here.
Ramon remembers it all, looking on as the cameras rolled, shooting different scenes in the surrounding working-class neighborhood.
When he did the loan-sharking part, this is it.
Ramon has lived in the neighborhood his whole life, and growing up, he'd go to the tracks for fun. It was a sort of escape from the city, right in the middle of it. And if you were feeling daring, you might even try to hop a train.
For many years, I did that.
So we're making a left on what street?
This is Gurney.
He walks to a street bridge that overlooks these tracks.
And now we're making a left.
Some people pass by.
It's early in the morning. A lot of people are actually probably trying to get well, getting their fix, as they say.
Ramon is almost 50 years old.
Yeah, it brings a lot of memories around here.
Like a lot of people in this surrounding community, his parents first came to this area from Puerto Rico, looking for a better life. His dad worked maintenance at a casino. His mom found a job at one of the many nearby factories.
Yeah, for 30 years she was a machine operator. It was on 2nd in Wyoming.
We pause, a train carrying oil tanks passes underneath. There used to be a lot more trains on these tracks.
That railroad track was the lifeblood of Philadelphia, and specifically of the sort of magic of industrialization.
Philippe Bourgois is an anthropologist at UCLA's Center for Social Medicine. He's studied this neighborhood in and around the tracks and kept a nearby apartment for several years. Philippe says at one time, this area was a hive of manufacturing. Starting in the 1800s, Philadelphia turned into the workshop of the world with all its factories.
They were proud buildings. They were modernization. They were the future, you know, of the world at that time.
Hats, sleds, carpets, candy, and more came out of here. And surrounding them were blocks and blocks of two-story brick row homes.
People would step out their door and go right into a factory within two or three square blocks or four square blocks. So it was a super productive site, and it was a super dynamic site.
These tracks were the artery shepherding those factory goods out to port, even through the 1950s. But then everything imploded. The factories here started closing.
They started dropping just vertiginously, consistently, all the way to the present day. They're still dropping.
New technology started taking over, demands change, manufacturing went abroad. People here moved out.
That was the tragedy that hit the great city of industrial Philadelphia, and Philadelphia never recovered from that.
By the 1970s, only about 2 in 5 people were employed in this part of North Philly. Homes and warehouses went vacant. By the 1980s,
the narcotics economy, the global narcotics economy, essentially flooded into the vacuum and started creating an employment center. It was the only, basically, equal opportunity employer, so to speak, for the local population.
Philippe says it created the perfect habitat, a strikingly huge habitat of blocks and blocks of bandos, or abandoned houses and factories. And that gave way to everything that goes with the sale and use of drugs. the sex work, the violence, addiction, desperation.
Those kinds of abandoned spaces become areas that are just completely unpoliceable.
That's most likely an overdose.
Again, Ramon.
As I got older, I came back, you know, and gravitated to these tracks.
Ramon got caught up in the lure of it all. He went from a rising high school baseball star to corner drug dealer.
I dealt drugs for many years.
When did you start?
Oh, wow. I was at the age of 17. So that was about 1985. Yeah, 1985.
What were you selling?
Back then, I sold cocaine.
Our anthropologist, Philippe, says cocaine's cousin also flooded in.
Crack hit with a vengeance. You know, it hit all over the country in the mid-1980s and early 1990s. But in Philadelphia, in that particular neighborhood, it hit with a particular vengeance.
And being sandwiched between New York, New Jersey, and Delaware, this surrounding neighborhood became the ideal export platform for drugs.
It was so wide open, and when I say wide open, everybody was using back then. And it just grew bigger and bigger. It's like a snowball effect.
But in the 90s, another blizzard swept in that hasn't let up.
It is now considered the chic drug of the 90s.
They call it skag, junk, and smack, but whatever the street name, heroin use is again on the rise in Philadelphia.
You know, it's such a perfect site. You can have these very, very efficient open-air markets that actually, quote-unquote, serve the client in a very efficient way.
The lure of a drug-induced euphoria. The rush of the high.
Competition between dozens of small dealers like Ramon, who turned to selling heroin, fueled the race toward the cheapest, purest product.
There were different names. We had Godfather, Super Buick, whew, Too Strong. If you had a good drug, everybody knew about it.
Word got out. People came into this neighborhood from all over, not just to find drugs, but to use them. And there was a very convenient place for this.
This was where one of the openings was, towards the tracks, where people used to go in into the bushes to inject and to literally get high in peace, where they thought they were safe.
Did that include you?
Yes.
After selling for years in between stints in jail and prison, Ramon started using.
So I would literally come out of here, literally coming out of these bushes from the tracks in a paranoid state.
The area right by these tracks basically turned into shooting galleries, especially under the bridges, hidden from above. Some people stayed, living in so-called encampments. And even though this landscape was hidden, it had its own culture.
And you had people down here that had new needles, they had their cookers and everything, they had water down here. So everything would be ready for you.
The influx of clean needles came from a big public health push that's really helped curb the spread of HIV and Hep C. But in recent years, Ramon and others say these tracks have gotten a lot more traffic. A surge in opioid prescribing, or prescription pain pills, has only added more fuel to the fire. The demand for heroin does not appear to be letting up.
Overdoses rose nearly 40%.
This is not a new problem, but by God, this is the worst it has ever been.
Last year, more than 4,600 Pennsylvanians died from drug overdoses.
Now, drug dealers are just selling fentanyl. That's very, very dangerous.
Synthetics like fentanyl are now being mixed with the heroin, making bags so much more potent. It dramatically increases the risk of an overdose. In the area just in and around these tracks last year, the city counted 17 overdose deaths. This summer, the situation reached a tipping point. The city and railroad company have brought in bulldozers. They've been clearing out the loads of trash that include years' worth of dirty needles that have piled up. They've been removing trees and bushes where people might have found cover. And they've brought in additional police and outreach workers. Many of the nearby residents and families are thrilled that finally something is being done. But still, questions remain. What will happen to people dealing with addiction? Where will they go? I put that question to Philippe. I look at these tracks and they're just long and wide and vast, and I wonder what do you make of this changing landscape now and this idea that it just needs to be closed down?
Well, my first reaction is that, I guess it's the French expression, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more we say it's going to change, the more it's going to be the same thing.
Philippe says over the years, the city and police would crack down on the whole situation. They'd close a vacant building or move people out of a spot along the tracks. He says it would just move elsewhere.
You can't arrest your way out of that because it just, like an air in a balloon, just pushes over to the side to another abandoned factory.
It's unclear whether the current cleanup could mark something different. For the first time in decades, meanwhile, people are moving back into the city. But the drug epidemic is hard to keep up with. There's expected to be well over 1,000 overdose deaths just this year in Philadelphia, surpassing previous records. Ramon says either way, this is a resilient place. With families, neighbors, churches, community groups, and hope. He sees a lot of people trying to make the surrounding neighborhood better. And it was neighbors who saved him and called for help when he was shot many years ago and left for dead in the street. It's been nearly 3 years since he went down to the tracks to shoot up. He's involved in the community now, even helping people connect with services. And he still lives just a 10-minute walk from here. Despite the changes and the challenges, the uncertainties of this next phase, Ramon says he's not going anywhere.
Sometimes I even get emotional because I'm grateful. I'm really grateful that I'm able to walk through these streets again in a better state, you know, because it literally brings me to tears to know that I've lost friends and they weren't able to get themselves together and talk about it.
That was Alana Gordon reporting. Joel Wolfram contributed to this story.